Welcome to the Interpreter Foundation podcast. I'm Martin Tanner, your host. Our discussion topic for this podcast is the attack on the LDS Chapel in Grand Blanc, Michigan, by Thomas Sanford on September 25, 2025. The mission of the Interpreter Foundation is to support the church through scholarship. We make available to you the very best scholarship available. We invite you to see what the Interpreter Foundation has to offer at interpreterfoundation.org. If you like this podcast, please tell your friends about it and give us a 5-star rating. Now, on with our discussion about the attack on the LDS Chapel in Grand Blanc, Michigan, by Thomas Sanford. Sunday morning, September 28th, 2025, at 10 a.m., the sacrament meeting at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on McCandish Road in Grand Blanc, Michigan, had just commenced, as it would in thousands of chapels throughout the world. But this time it would be tragically different. Members of the 150 or so congregation in the ward were fasting when they arrived at their decades-old home of worship because the monthly fast testimony meeting had been held a week earlier because of General Conference. Following the traditional bishopric greeting and opening hymn, there was an opening prayer and announcements. The sacrament hymn was sung and the sacrament blessed and passed. Then a member of the bishopric, Ben Haugeboom, stood up and began to bear his testimony of Jesus Christ. It was 10 a.m. Before he finished his testimony, the chapel was rocked by what sounded like an explosion. A massive dent appeared in the wall right behind Brother Haugeboom and the choir seats, and the wall began to crack. One ward member who was part of the congregation in the chapel at the time was Brian Taylor. Brother Taylor assumed a car had malfunctioned and accidentally jumped the curb, maybe sped over the grass and slammed into the brick front of the church facing McCandlish Avenue. Brother Taylor was thinking to himself, the car must have been going really fast, at least 50 miles an hour to get over the curb, and still hit the wall that hard. He and other brethren in the chapel immediately jumped up and headed out of the chapel, out the west doors, to see what had happened. When they did that, a woman yelled at them. She had left sacrament meeting a minute or two before to get fruit snacks from her car for her kids. "He did it on purpose," she screamed. She had just seen a 40-year-old man, Thomas Jacob Sanford, known as Jake Sanford to most, from nearby Burton, Michigan, ram his Chevy Silverado pickup into the church. Right under the plaque, which said, "The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, visitors welcome." Jake Sanford's pickup had two American flags on poles just behind the cab. Bricks from the building were strewn across the hood of the top of the cab and other places on the pickup. Hearing the ward sister scream, "He did it on purpose," the church members who were heading outside to perhaps help made a decision that saved their lives. Even though they didn't know exactly what was going on, "He did it on purpose" sounded quite ominous, and they decided the crash was intentional, there could be danger, so they immediately ran back into the building and began to usher everyone out of the chapel and out through a different door at the back of the building to their cars in the main parking lot behind the building. Some people got into their cars. Some people fled to an area of forested trees behind the meeting house. At that point, Brian Taylor then stopped in the east foyer to lock the glass doors in case the driver tried to enter the church. But before he could do that, a father's fear suddenly gripped him. His teenage son had been assigned to help people in the west foyer on the other side of the building where gunfire rang out. Bam, bam, bam. And then again, bam, bam, bam. Staccato gunfire after one right after another. The shooter, Jake Sanford, had just entered the west foyer and shot at least one child and another church member, actually several church members, and then poured gasoline out of his container all over the chapel, the pews, the carpet, and set the building on fire. Some ward members were doctors and emergency care professionals. They risked their own lives to enter and re-enter the chapel after it was on fire to help wounded and burned members out of the building, which was escalating into an inferno. On the east side of the building, unable to see or get his son, Brian Taylor continued to shepherd people down the long east hallway and out of the building into the parking lot. There, he found his wife and two older women who couldn't run across to the field. The couple, Brian and his wife, helped the women into their own car, and then Taylor started to call out for his son. Brian's son answered, which was a huge relief, said he was hiding in another car in the parking lot and felt safe there, and also said that he was too scared to get out and join the family in their own car. Hearing that his son was safe, Brian Taylor looked over at the building to see what else he could do and saw the shooter coming out of the west side back door, raise his gun, and start to shoot again. Brian floored his car to get out of the parking lot. Gunshots hit the windshield, and glass exploded all over inside. Taylor started to bleed from his face and arms. There was so much blood, his wife thought he'd been shot. Seconds later, though, Taylor and the passengers were safe across the street, where they parked in a neighborhood and found people ready and willing to shelter them and help. At the same time, an officer from the Michigan Division of Natural Resources and other police departments from the Grand Blanc Township had a brief shootout with Jake Sanford, who was killed. Taylor immediately returned to the church to reunite with his son, and they watched as the fire consumed the Grand Blanc Snake Center. During the few minutes Jake Sanford was inside the building, he shot 12 ward members, ages 6 through 78, four of whom died. Craig Hayden, age 72, a married father and church leader, died at the scene. John Bond, 77, a Navy veteran whose wife was of another denomination, was taken to Henry Ford Genesis Hospital. During surgery, He died before his wife was able to see him. Craig Hayden and John Bond were running towards the accident. They probably thought there was just an auto accident. They had not heard the woman yell, "He did it on purpose." And they were shot by Jake Sanford and killed. Two others who were shot and killed were a priesthood holder, Pat Howard, age 77, who was in the congregation with his wife, Kitty, and Thelma Armstrong, who was attending the service with her daughter. Both were shot to death before they were able to escape the chapel. Among the wounded were Ben Phelps, who served a mission to France and was shot in the abdomen. His 6-year-old son, notice he served a mission in France. His young son, who was six, his name was D'Artagnan, after one of the three musketeers. And D'Artagnan was shot in the arm. Ben was severely injured. He's been released from the hospital. Greg McCatt was shot in the stomach, hip, and leg and is in the ICU. Jeff Kubiak in the congregation was shot in the ankle, which shattered, and he's had surgeries to try to repair it. Jared Hicken, a medical doctor, an ER doc, was severely wounded in the thigh. His wife, Brandy Hicken, was also shot, and their 5-year-old daughter, Piper, was shot in the back. Jared was severely injured when he was shot in the thigh and is in the ICU. Brandy and their daughter have been released from the hospital. Another severely injured member of the congregation was Bridger Frampton, another medical doctor who was also an ER doc and a fourth-year resident at Henry Ford Genesis Hospital. He ran back into the building at least three times to help people get out, and as a result, suffered severe smoke inhalation. The Bishop of the Ward, Jeffrey Schwab, thank people for their prayers and love after the horrendous shooting. Most significant, he said it was the most significant time of his life where he felt the love and prayers of other people. He also said that it was very inspiring, the amount of contact that had been given by friends not of their faith. The big question mark to many is the motive. The FBI labeled Jake Sanford's crazy actions as a targeted act of violence. Some say that he had tremendous hatred towards the church. Everyone knows that there are attacks motivated by hatred. But what causes this kind of hatred? Why would somebody have the level of hatred that would cause them to do something like this? Because by all accounts, Jake Sanford was, other than this incident and his hatred of Latter-day Saints, a fairly normal guy. He actually spent time talking with friends, neighbors. He was a family man. So, what would motivate him to do this? A lot of people have speculated that it was driven by resentment towards the LDS faith that stemmed from a painful breakup that he had with a Latter-day Saint girlfriend when he was living in Utah. He lived in the Jeremy Ranch area and was a snowplow truck driver. He never married the woman who wouldn't marry him because he would not become LDS. But that isn't the reason for what he did, according to Jake Sanford's lifelong friend. His lifelong friend said that he did fall in love with the LDS woman. The breakup ended painfully, but that he had largely moved on from the breakup. He got married to someone else. He was working in his family's fireplace business, and he was caring for a 10-year-old son who was born in 2015 with a rare genetic disease. Contributors would certainly be that Jake Sanford, according to his best friend, became a heavy meth user and had brushes with the law. He had a burglary charge and two OWIs in Michigan, which means operating while intoxicated. That would be a DUI in most other states, driving under the influence. After Jake Sanford was back in Michigan, had the drug problems, had the drinking problems, and was angry about the breakup, he apparently started to read anti-Latter-day Saint, commonly known as anti-Mormon literature. How do we know this? We know this because of the way he described the church to people. One of his friends said, quote, "He got this whole fascination with Mormons that they are the Antichrist and that they're going to take over the world," close quote. It even came up when he went to his best friend's wedding, where all he could talk about was Mormons, and his friend said, "Give it a rest." The only place you get information that says Mormons are the Antichrist and they're going to take over the world, and that you have to get a tattoo removed. Jake Sanford had tattoos to become a Latter-day Saint, which is not true. The only place you could get ideas from that would be people who are very critical of the church, anti-Latter-day Saints. And as recently as a few weeks before the shootings happened, a candidate for city council, a man named Chris Johns in Burton, Michigan, knocked on Sanford's door while canvassing and found himself in a delightful conversation until the last part where the LDS church came up. And Jake Sanford told this candidate, Chris Johns, that the church tried to make him remove his tattoos. Quote, "It demanded that he remove his tattoos, become a member." And according to Chris Johns, Mr. Sanford said repeatedly that the Mormons are the Antichrist and described him when he was saying these things as extremely angry. Now consider this. No one makes Latter-day Saints remove tattoos, or no one makes anyone remove a tattoo to become a Latter-day Saint. There are temple workers these days who have tattoos. I know members of bishoprics who have tattoos. It's just wrong information. The other place you get wrong information about the church, like they are trying to take over the world and they are the Antichrist, is from social media, anti-Mormons, evangelical ministers, and some radical evangelical church members. Examples are rampant, and I've had run-ins and discussions and debates with many of this ilk over the decades. One of my very first radio shows in the early, early 90s was with Gerald and Sandra Tanner, notorious ex-Mormons, anti-Mormons. They had these kinds of ideas and inaccurate perceptions about the church. Reverend James White from Phoenix, Arizona, someone I've debated several times on campus at the University of Utah, and also I've debated with another anti-Latter-day Saint Presbyterian pastor, Jason Wallace. They would all make claims along the lines of Latter-day Saints are not Christians. They are trying to take over the world. They have a different Jesus. You can think of Walter Martin's Kingdom of the Cults, the group Ex-Mormons for Jesus, Saints Alive, and many others. I've seen dozens of these kinds of posts, even recently. I saw one by a former LDS sister missionary who was making all kinds of claims that were false, either because she is uninformed, which is difficult for me to believe because you know she's been through the temple if she's a missionary or was a missionary, or if she just is deliberately lying or misremembers about some of the things in the temple. But whatever the rationale or reason, these kinds of negative claims get fanned into a forest fire. These get fanned into a conflagration. And when people make negative smack talk about the LDS Church, you have some certain small number of people. And when you think about it, it's not as small as we wish, who will do horrible things towards the church, just like Jake Sanford. And this is what I believe happened and caused him to attack and shoot church members and to attack the building itself with his truck and to make the statements about the church being the Antichrist and trying to take over the world and other ridiculous statements. If you want to get just a little flavor for this, you can, without reading all the negative LDS tripe that goes with it, take a look at a short article that contains almost nothing except a very long list attached to it. What is the list? What is the title of the Wikipedia article? The title is, quote, List of Attacks against Latter-day Saint Churches, close quote. I'll say that again, quote, List of Attacks against Latter-day Saint Churches, close quote. If you go to that site, you will see that beginning with the arson that burned down the Nauvoo Temple, all the way up through Jake Sanford's burning, torching of the Michigan Steakhouse, Steak Center. There have been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of similar attacks. Not just a few, but hundreds. And the number dramatically increased after the year 2000. Why? Because of social media and the internet. And that's the real danger. People need to be aware of how harsh and horrible the statements are against the church on social media and be prepared to respond to them. Thank you for listening. I'm Martin Tanner, your host with the Interpreter Foundation. Join us again next time.